Welcome to Music for Life, exploring the purpose and value of music to humanity's enrichment. I'm your host, Ryan Malone. In this episode, we will explore the centerpiece of the standard orchestra, the string section. In addition to introducing you to each instrument of this family and some of the great repertoire composed for these instruments, we will discuss the variety of sounds these instruments can produce. In our segment, Sounds of Scripture, we will explore the fiddles of the Bible. In our segment, Classroom Corner, we will discuss how the violin is taught to children of a young age and the many benefits of learning this instrument. And in our segment, Backstage Banter, I go to the Tulsa Violin Shop to visit Lou Lynch, one of the region's most demanded luthiers.
Changing one string sometimes can change the sound of an instrument.
Today on Music for Life, the Fiddle Family. Of the roughly 100 players in a modern orchestra, more than half are string players. Varying sizes of fiddles, violins, violas, cellos, and basses. This is the most used section in most orchestral music. This family of instruments, this section, can deliver a wonderful variety of tonal colors and sounds, sweeping melodies, rapid passages. Their sound is usually produced by running a bow across the strings, but the strings can also be plucked. Either way, our ears never weary of the sound of this section. The color of sound among the entire string section is impressively homogeneous. The lowest notes on the bass have a similar color to the highest notes on the violin. Today I want to introduce you to each major instrument of the bowed string or the fiddle family. The violin, the viola, the cello, and the bass. But first, let's talk about how sound is produced on these instruments. As I said already, the main way sound is produced on them is by running a bow, comprised of horsehair, across the strings. That friction causes the string to vibrate and produces a variety of pitches. And there's quite a variety of sound that a fiddle player can get from simply bowing the instrument. Here's a traditional example of bowing the string, as heard in this excerpt of the Cello Suite No. 3 in C major. This is the fifth movement, Bourré, performed by cellist Tess Remy Schumacher. That was an excerpt from the Cello Suite in C by Johann Sebastian Bach, the fifth movement, Bourré, performed by cellist Tess Remy Schumacher. That was an example of a string player bowing the string. You may have noticed that one instrument was capable of producing more than one note at a time. Because of the way pitches are produced, the fiddles are some of the instruments that can produce more than one pitch at a time. Some instruments can only do one at a time. The fiddles do it by bowing across two strings at once. Playing two strings at once, that's called double stops. Because the instruments have four strings total, usually, there are also triple and quadruple stops. Now, these are particularly challenging to play, and it's not possible to make three or four notes sound exactly together. It has more of a rolled effect. This is because of the shape of the bridge. That's where the strings are held over the soundpost. The bridge is a piece of wood that's curved, so the bow can't bow across all four at exactly the same time. But you'll hear this double stop, triple stop, quadruple stop a lot in bluegrass music. But here's an example of a solo violin piece from the standard classical repertoire. This is actually from the Baroque era. This is also by Bach, where the performer has to commonly produce more than one pitch at a time. This is the epic final movement of Bach's Violin Partita No. 2 in D minor. This movement is the Chaconne. Here's the end of that movement, performed by violinist Itzhak Perlman. We are talking about different ways that sound can be produced on the instruments of the fiddle family, or the bowed string instruments, violin, viola, cello, bass. And that was an example of how the string instruments can play more than one note at a time, more than one pitch at a time. And that is by running their bow across more than one string at the same time. Another bowing technique that can be done on these fiddle instruments is where the performer bounces the bow across the string. And bouncing the bow comes in the form of either what's called spiccato or ricochet. They sound similar, but here's an example from Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto. This is in the first movement, toward the end of a big solo section for the violin called the cadenza. Right before the orchestra comes back in, you hear the violinist bouncing his bow on the string over these fast notes. This is very challenging, but you'll get an idea of what this bounced bow sounds like right before the orchestra comes in. Then I'll let it play all the way to the end of the first movement. This is violinist Isaac Stern with the Philadelphia Orchestra under the baton of Eugene Ormandy. Thank you. That's the end of the first movement of Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto. I faded it out because it goes right into the slow movement, the second movement. But the beginning of that example that I played for you was the moment in the concerto where the soloist bounces the bow on the string. That's another technique that fiddle players can use to create different colors with their instruments. Another unique sound the bow creates has to do with where the hair hits the string. If the hair is bowed across the strings right on the bridge of the instrument, that curved piece of wood that holds the strings up over the soundboard, if that bow is drawn across that part of the strings, it's called sul ponticello, or on the bridge, literally, from Italian, and it produces a somewhat glassy or even gritty sound. Here's an example of sul ponticello. From an original stage production produced here at Herbert W. Armstrong College called David, The Endless Throne Begins, this scene depicts King Saul being troubled by an evil spirit. So I chose here to use ponticello for the strings. And that's the moment in the action where young harpist David comes in to soothe the troubled King Saul. But before that, the strings were all bowing across the bridge, sul ponticello, as it's known in Italian, and that gives that glassy, gritty effect that's so effective in that scene, I think. You're listening to Music for Life, and today we are discussing the centerpiece of the standard orchestra, the string section. Our episode is titled The Fiddle Family. String players can get a variety of sounds by bowing the instrument, as we've shown so far. There's another interesting sound that can emanate from these stringed instruments, even when just bowed traditionally. This is done when the fingers of the left hand don't push down the string all the way. See, different pitches are created by the string player shortening or lengthening the string based on where they place their left hand fingers. But by not pushing the string all the way down to the fingerboard, a certain acoustic phenomenon happens where only certain overtones of the pitch can be heard. These are called harmonics. Here's a section of a piece where the string soloist is using just harmonics. The effect is an airy, whistle-like tone. It's especially high on a violin. We're going to listen to an example of a cellist doing it. Now, with the violin, I should say that you already heard some of that in the Mendelssohn Violin Concerto, just for one or two notes out of the texture at a time, where the violinist touches that string and makes that harmonic. But this is an entire section at the beginning of a piece composed by an American composer still alive today, Alan Lewis Smith. This is a piece titled Covered Wagon Woman. It's based on a journal written by a lady who traversed the entire continental United States back in the pioneer days. This movement is called the Sioux Tribe and the White Squaw. Thank you. We are talking about the fiddle family on today's episode of Music for Life. That was a cello. That was a cello performing what's called harmonics. The left hand usually pushes the string down all the way to shorten or lengthen the string to change the pitch. But in this case, the left hand finger just touches the string, creating an overtone where you hear just an overtone of a particular pitch. And an entire section, like that piece by Alan Lewis Smith, built around this harmonic technique of playing, creates such an airy effect. You may have noticed that harmonics don't have any vibrato. Vibrato is the term referring to the vibrating of the note. When you hear a lot of string music, you'll usually hear the pitch vibrating. By basically wiggling their left finger, string players create that sweet sound known as vibrato. That is the majority of the sound we've heard today in all the examples so far. And just to be certain you can hear that, here is a classic example of sustained notes being played on the violin, but being played with vibrato. So you'll hear the pitch and you'll hear it wiggling a little bit as you hear these pitches being sustained. That's the main theme of the second movement of Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto, which we've already heard a little bit of. Nearly every note in that melody was played with vibrato. So that's vibrato, or a vibrating pitch on a stringed instrument. But sometimes composers, like me, prefer the string players to play without vibrato, and so we indicate that in the score. This is the case for an entire movement of my musical, The Book of Isaiah. The strings accompany a soprano in a song about how God inhabits eternity, and the non-vibrato playing, I believe, gives a sustained feel that is fitting to this idea of eternity. Here's a little bit of that movement.
Gone are yesterday's tears.
That was an example of non-vibrato, or another kind of sound string players can get from their bowed instruments, where they don't wiggle the left hand, and therefore the note does not have that vibrating feel, but rather what we call a straight tone. You would have heard that from the string players of that pit orchestra for the musical produced here at Armstrong College, The Book of Isaiah. And along with the harp sound, that was the only other sound you heard, was that of the string quintet, playing without vibrato. We're talking about the fiddle family today on Music for Life, the bowed string instruments, or the string section of the standard orchestra. Now, another way string players produce sound on their instrument is by not using the bow at all. They merely pluck the string. Now, this isn't the most common way these bowed string instruments produce sound, but when this effect is used, it creates unique variety in a piece of music. Here's an entire movement performed this way in this technique known as pizzicato. This is the Simple Symphony for String Orchestra, Opus 4, by a British composer, Benjamin Britten. The second movement is called Playful Pizzicato. That was the English Chamber Orchestra performing Benjamin Britten's Simple Symphony for String Orchestra. That was the second movement titled Playful Pizzicato, and that was an example of bowed string instruments being plucked instead of bowed. You are listening to Music for Life. This is KPCG, and I'm your host, Ryan Malone. Today's episode is featuring these bowed string instruments, that is, the fiddle family. Finally, one more technique string players employ to create a color unique to their instruments is by bowing back and forth on a particular pitch so quickly that it has a trembling type of effect. This is called tremolo. Thank you. This is from the fourth movement, the final movement of Maurice Ravel's String Quartet. Here it is being performed by the Juilliard String Quartet. This is a grouping of two violins, a viola, and a cello. And this movement is employing a lot of quick bow action known as tremolo.
Thank you.
was the fourth and final movement of Maurice Ravel's String Quartet in F, performed by the Juilliard String Quartet, and it showed us an example of tremolo, quite a bit of tremolo, plus some pizzicato, you probably heard, and then some traditional bowing, of course. Now, before we get into introducing each instrument of this orchestral bowed string family, we will get into our segment, Sounds of Scripture, where we survey the Bible's many references to music to give us an idea of what ancient music may have been like. This is Music for Life on KPCG. I'm your host, Ryan Malone. That's the Venice Baroque Orchestra. Now, it's not playing music from biblical times, as gorgeous as that piece of music is, but it is one of several Baroque ensembles that use an older type of string technology. See, the strings they are bowing are not made of metal or steel, but of animal intestines. These are called gut strings. These types of strings were more prevalent during ancient times, along with other materials used for fiddle strings like silk or other natural fibers. The Bible makes frequent reference to string instruments, but most would assume these are plucked instruments like harps, lyres, lutes, or guitars. But there is evidence that bowed string instruments also existed during biblical times. Now, don't think that references to the viol in the King James Version of the Bible refer to an ancient violin or fiddle. Those references are from the Hebrew word nebel, which, in an earlier program, I showed were more likely related to the Julian pipes or the bagpipes of the Celts. But there is some interesting evidence of bowed string instruments in the biblical record. There are strong cultural connections between the ancient Hebrews and Western civilization, which can be expounded in another show. But given the prominence of bowed string instruments in Western civilization, we shouldn't be surprised to see them in ancient biblical culture, in ancient Hebrew culture. One of the Hebrew words translated into the King James Version of the Bible as instruments is the Hebrew word shalish, which literally translates third. Now, some say this instrument could be a triangular-shaped instrument, or perhaps even a triangle, but actually there are many depictions of ancient bowed instruments that were, in fact, three-stringed mechanisms. Our bowed strings of today are four strings. Harps usually have a lot more than three or four strings, obviously. But in addition to that possibly vague reference to a bowed string instrument in the Bible, there's this verse in Psalm 92, verse 3. It says, "Upon an instrument of 10 strings, upon the psaltery, upon the harp with a solemn sound." That first instrument, where it says an instrument of 10 strings, that actually comes from the Hebrew word asor. It's transliterated A-S-O-R. Now, as English speakers, we may just look over that and think, oh, that's an instrument of 10 strings. And the Hebrew word does imply tenth. But to just take the Hebrew word for tenth and translate it into instrument of 10 strings, that could be a little precarious. Now, there's also a reference to this same instrument of 10 strings, or this asor, whatever this is, in Psalm 33:2, and it says, "Praise the Eternal with harp, kinnor, sing unto him with psaltery, nebel, and an instrument of 10 strings, asor." So this is the same trio of instruments that we read about in Psalm 92, verse 3. The harp, the nebel, this bagpipe or Julian pipe type instrument, and then this asor. What is that? Psalm 144, verse 9 also mentions this instrument along with the nebel, so it's there in a duo. And it says, "I will sing a new song unto you, O God, upon a psaltery," there's that nebel, "and an instrument of 10 strings, that asor, will I sing praises unto you." Now, the asor itself may have referred to a 10-stringed instrument. The Jewish historian Josephus refers to a 10-stringed instrument, actually, played upon with a bow. That's what he wrote, played upon with a bow, though most translations of Josephus write, struck with a plectrum. That may indicate that the Hebrews employed a bowed string instrument. And if that culture is the predecessor to much of our Occidental or Western culture, surely this would be likely, since the bowed string instrument is the king of the orchestra and the most numerous kind of instrument used in our modern ensembles. The plectrum, this plucking device that's discussed or pictured in various ancient drawings, is actually really too big to be a plucking device. It would make more sense that that's a bow. In fact, bowed string instruments did not originate in modern history with the Italians, but were known in antiquity, originating in Persia and Arabia, according to the historian Carl Engel. He even notes that the Hindi word for this kind of instrument, one of the originating cultures of this instrument, is kinri, K-I-N-N-E-R-E, similar to the Hebrew word kinor. So there's even a linguistic connection between the Hebrews' plucked instrument and the Indian bowed string instrument. Joseph Walker, in the historical memoirs of the Irish bards, discusses the instrument, the Shonar Crit, C-I-O-N-A-R-C-R-U-I-T, as an instrument of 10 strings played on with a bow or plectrum. He writes, "As no drawing of this instrument has reached us, we can only suppose it resembled the hashur or asur of the Hebrews, of which such frequent mention is made in the Psalms by the name of the 10-stringed instrument." Now, there are some cultural similarities between the Hebrews and the Celts, which we can talk about in another program. But that's interesting, seeing that they have this reference to a 10-stringed instrument that's played on with probably a bow. And Josephus, in the quote above, where it talked about a 10-stringed instrument played upon with a bow, he called this instrument the kinra, perhaps where this Shonar Crit received its derivation. Also, the British word crowd, which was actually the word for fiddle, assuredly shares its etymology with this Gaelic word crit, C-R-U-I-T, and the British word C-R-O-W-D. Another interesting etymological connection is the word for a certain bowed instrument called the geiga. The Swedes use the word giga to denote a Jew's harp, and Engel wonders if this word is the root of the English word jig, music danced often to the sound of a fiddle. So there are some interesting linguistic connections there. In Nehemiah 7:36, there is a reference to the musical instruments of David. But the Hebrew reads literally, the singing instruments of David. Now, that could simply mean the instruments were used as part of vocal music, but it may actually refer to the tone of the instrument. A statement by a 17th century bishop contains the phrase, "Let the British crowd sing." Now, crowd, again, is not a group of people in this case, but an ancient word for a type of fiddle. And it's interesting that the British talk about how the fiddle sings. Let the British crowd sing. Let the British fiddle sing. Now, perhaps the singing instruments of David that the Hebrews used referred to the sweet sounds of the bowed strings. According to 1 Chronicles 23, verse 5, David had 4,000 Levites playing instruments he made. The likelihood that some of them were using the bow-on-string technology is not that far-fetched. Consider also illustrations from the medieval period that represent a monarch holding a string instrument and a bow. And these figures are meant to represent none other than King David. This has been Sounds of Scripture, and you are listening to Music for Life. I'm your host, Ryan Malone. This is KPCG. Let's continue with our main discussion now of the fiddle family, the bowed string instruments. There are mainly four different kinds in the standard orchestra. First, let's talk about the violin. Of these varying sizes of fiddles, the violin is the smallest and highest. It's usually the most populous section of the orchestra, and it is most prominent because of its versatility. It can produce four octaves and is unmatched in its expressiveness. The violins are commonly split into two sections in the orchestra, violin 1 and violin 2, the equivalent perhaps of the soprano and alto sections of a chorus. The leader of the first violin section is called the concertmaster. He or she leads the tuning of the string section and sometimes performs solos. This person also gets paid more. It is difficult to choose just one or two quintessential examples of violin music in the repertoire to play for you, just because there is so much. That little snippet I just played was from Beethoven's epic Violin Concerto. Check that out to hear more great violin music. But I am going to play a short movement of one of the most famous violin concerti of all time. A concerto has come to mean a piece for a solo instrument and orchestra, or a small group of instruments alongside an orchestra. So the one versus the many, or the few versus the many. This particular concerto is part of a set of four violin concerti that Antonio Vivaldi wrote. Antonio Vivaldi was a Baroque composer from Italy, and he wrote hundreds of concerti, and he was a violinist, so most of what he wrote was violin concerti. Each concerto in this set of four concertis was meant to represent a season of the Northern Hemisphere. We will talk more in depth about these concerti in another program, but here is the second movement of the concerto meant to depict winter. You will hear the soloist performing a sweet melody by bowing the string and playing with vibrato. The orchestra, comprised mostly of strings, is employing pizzicato, that is, the plucking of the strings. And Vivaldi does this for a specific purpose. The melody of the solo violin is meant to represent, during winter, those sitting inside, warmed by a fire, while the raindrops come down outside. And the raindrops are depicted by the string orchestra playing pizzicato. This is the second movement of Vivaldi's three-movement concerto, The Winter. Yitzhak Perlman is again our violin soloist with the London Philharmonic Orchestra. That was The Winter, the second movement by Antonio Vivaldi, and that was an example of the violin playing solo with an orchestra. Now it's time for our Classroom Corner segment, where we explore different methods and curricula for introducing young people to music. That is a class of 8 third graders who took Introduction to Violin last semester at Imperial Academy, the primary and secondary educational institution here on the Herbert W. Armstrong College campus. All third graders go through a year of Introduction to Orchestra class, where they learn the recorder, some rudimentary drum techniques, and Introduction to Violin. And for the Classroom Corner segment today, we will discuss some of the methods and benefits of introducing the violin to young students. Now, while there are various methods of learning how to play the violin, the two general methods are the traditional and the Suzuki method. The traditional method is based on centuries of European violin training, rooted in the book The Art of Playing on the Violin by Francesco Geminiani, published in 1751. With this method, students generally begin by learning how to play simple tunes, folk songs, and etudes, and this method encourages note reading as early on as possible, developing strong music literacy. The Suzuki method was developed in the mid-20th century by Japanese violinist Shinichi Suzuki, who observed that children learn to speak their mother tongue simply by living in their native environment, and they are able to speak the language far earlier than they are able to read or write in it. So applying these same principles, the Suzuki method immerses students in music from an early age, learning how to play by ear first, imitating teacher, parent, or recording. This method was established in the United States in 1964 and has grown in popularity since then. More recently, American violinist and composer Mark O'Connor has pioneered a new methodology for learning instruments of the fiddle family. He's been called America's Suzuki. The O'Connor method uses more traditional tunes from North America. His books include written paragraphs about the history of each piece. He believes that providing a historical excerpt about the music itself will inspire children to love what they are playing and to practice more. While he incorporates note reading right away, he also encourages improvisation. Now, there is value to learning a bowed string instrument like the violin at a young age. This is why we introduce it to every third grader here at Imperial Academy, at least for a semester. Learning the violin carries physical, social, and mental benefits. Looking at the mental benefits, a study by the Wilson Center for Humanities and Arts noted that middle school children who play the violin achieve greater academic achievement in comparison to their peers who don't engage in musical activities. A 2008 Harvard-based study found that those who take 3 or more years of violin do better on vocabulary and IQ tests than those who do not take music lessons. Physically, a violin student will find that their upper body strength will increase, resulting in better posture. Violin teachers are strict about the posture. It also improves flexibility and strength of the fingers over time. The simultaneous motions of bowing with the right hand and pressing the strings with the left hand improves coordination and motor skills. Learning the violin also provides social opportunities for students learning in a group setting, and this can be through group classes or orchestras. There is also intrinsic musical value to learning the violin or a similar fretless stringed instrument. Learning violin as a preliminary instrument is beneficial to a young musician because it develops auditory precision. Even the slightest adjustment of those left fingers on the fingerboard alters the pitch. So the student is trained to recognize any tuning flaws and be able to fix them. This, along with the development of coordination mentioned earlier, will benefit young musicians as they begin to take on new instruments. So, schools like Imperial Academy have taken the cue from these studies and put a high value on its elementary students learning the violin. This has been Classroom Corner. When we come back, we will have our backstage banter segment where I sit down with Lou Lynch in the Tulsa Violin Shop. He is a regionally demanded luthier. And also, of course, we're going to continue and finish our discussion of introducing each of the string instruments to you, these members of the fiddle family. I'm Ryan Malone, this is Music for Life, and we'll be right back.